The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Welcome to Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, comrade. My boss George and I are referring to each other as a comrade now. The more we listen to what's coming out of the potential Kamala Harris administration, we just figure you might as well start getting used to the nomenclature, you know, that sort of thing. But anyway, comrade or otherwise, you can just join the conversation at 770-5633-770-KMED. Email Bill at BillMyersShow.com. The Facebook.com/BillMyersShow feed is up. Speaking of Facebook, the CEO of Facebook, Meta, is what it's called now, Mark Zuckerberg, just really threw the Biden-Harris regime under the bus yesterday, and he admits now what we kind of figured was going on for quite some time. The regime pressured him to censor millions of Americans, and he regrets colluding with the Biden-Harris regime. In a letter addressed to House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan, Zuckerberg says he openly admits that Meta was subjected to relentless pressure by the Biden administration to censor content related to COVID-19. We knew that for a long, long time. Of course, the question was, we were wondering, even back at the time during the COVID period, was this something that Facebook was doing on its own, or was there somebody twisting their arm? Well, it's pretty well known now that the arms were twisted. And this was, too, even when the content was satirical or humorous, and they also repressed the Hunter Biden laptop. So, of course, you have the Hunter Biden laptop having the Biden administration or the Biden campaign, of course, twisting the arms. I guess in this case it was the FBI twisting the arm of the Facebook regime. Hunter Biden got to dial that down. So just out-and-out open election interference. You know, for all this talk about Russia, and everybody that's supposedly controlling our elections, everybody except, it's our own intelligence agencies that are controlling the election process here, too. How you like them apples, huh? The Meta CEO allegedly expresses deep regret. I'm deeply regretful. Sorry. For not being more vocal in resisting the government's demand, stating that the government pressure was wrong, he now recognizes that his company should have been more outspoken about the administration's overreach. In the letter, Zuckerberg details how senior officials from the Biden administration, including the White House, exerted consistent pressure on Meta's teams to remove or suppress content that did not align with the regime's narrative on COVID-19. In other words, the truth was repressed and the lie was pushed. As a matter of fact, the lie is still being pushed even today. Of course, now they're just more likely going to shift it over to monkeypox, right? Monkeypox. I love how, you know, the latest thing about the monkeypox or mpox, we're not supposed to call it monkeypox, right? It's mpox, is that so many kids have it. Yeah, it's usually a sexually transmitted disease. Of course, we couldn't pass judgment on people having sex with kids over in the areas where the monkeypox has broken out big time. Yeah, that, well, no. Well, it's different cultures, because, you know, multicultural society, everyone's culture is, you know, if we had cannibals in our society right now, we would have to probably have to say, well, you know, they were raised cannibals, so we have to understand that they were raised cannibals, and, you know, and if they eat your child, we're really sorry, but, you know, that's their culture. You can't. I'm only half kidding about that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's a big pebble in my shoe, the abuse of the language here, right? Remember the story we were talking about here recently, Hacienda, that Portland housing nonprofit, Hacienda CDC? And, of course, Lars was all over this. I had mentioned this. And this was the nonprofit that was helping people with down payments for homes. And they were telling everybody, well, you had to be a non-citizen. In other words, if you were an American citizen, you didn't qualify for the down payment assistance. Well, apparently, this is not true, but I'm not quite sure if I believe them, though. This is a statement here in Oregon Live this morning. A statement on Sunday was released. Hacienda Chief Executive Ernesto Fonseca said a consultant created the marketing materials, which he said mistakenly stated that the down payment assistance program excludes U.S. citizens. In fact, U.S. citizens can participate. So just know, with this Hacienda down payment, $30,000 of assistance, up to $30,000 for this. And by the way, this was created from Senate Bill 1579 a few years ago, all right? But just make sure that it's not just illegal aliens and foreign nationals that can get the down payment assistance, according to the Hacienda chief executive, Ernesto Fonseca. But U.S. citizens, you can take part in this, but you must qualify under other economic equity risk factors. Now, I can't help but think that, you know how many American citizens will qualify under the economic equity risk factors outlined in the state law? I'm going to say none. I'm going to say practically butkus, because this is all about rewarding friends. And American citizens aren't the friends of state government, apparently, here. Yeah, because what they'll probably say is that, well, you know, we would help you. You do qualify. You are an American citizen. You can apply for the down payment assistance, but you have citizenship privilege. Can you hear them saying that? Yeah, you have citizenship privilege, and since you are a citizen, you have much more... So technically you qualify, but you don't have enough economic equity risk factor points. In other words, you don't have enough equity points because you don't have... Well, you have citizenship privilege. Bet me. Bet me. So, you know, all the talk radio stations are just going nuts because this has been going out there about this down payment assistance program to buy houses, with American taxpayers paying for it, but Americans are not allowed to apply for it. It can only be foreign nationals. I still think that most of the money is going to go to foreign nationals. I would then raise the silly question of, why would American taxpayers be paying for down payment assistance, period, to foreign nationals and illegal aliens? If you can't afford to live here, get out. That's my economic assistance plan. It's 18 after 6. This is the Bill Myers Show, KMED and 99.3 KBXG. Oh, by the way, coming up here in the next 15 minutes or so, you know Ron Wyden, that man of the people, out there looking out for the little guy. No, I shouldn't do any lisping, right? Yeah, Senator Wyden, I'm looking out for the little people. The little people. Apparently, he doesn't want clothing to be inexpensive. National Taxpayer Union person has a story about this, and so I'll find out what that's all about. He wants you to pay more for clothes, I guess, but we'll find out more about what's going on. Also, Oregon Eagle, interesting reporting going on from the wildfire mapping deal. We'll talk a bit about that coming up, too.
Looking for a safe place to store your RV, trailer, or boat? Hardcastles offers a secure storage lot located conveniently on site with a keypad entry. With spots filling up quickly, stop by today to reserve yours. While you're there, check out the fully stocked line of enclosed, dump, flatbed, and utility trailers. Hardcastles' friendly and experienced staff are always available to help you find what you need. Open weekdays 8:30 to 5, Saturdays 9 to 3. Hardcastles, where the customer is king.
Have it your way. Have it your way.
Pops, this isn't a burger joint.
Yeah, this is a jewelry store.
With Lashberg, you can change anything from width to size to material. The best part is the warranties. Free through us, genuine lifetime warranty, and a lifetime free resizing. No strings attached and no fine print.
It's good to be the king. I get to choose.
Everyone can choose with Lashberg, Pops.
Come into Father and Son Jewelry and have it your way.
When you call Fontana Roofing, our singular focus is a focus. You have questions, we have answers.
Hello, you've reached Fontana Roofing. How may I help you? Yes, we install a plethora of roofs. Traditional, composite, metal, tile, shake, you name it. All types of buildings, whether it's a re-roof or new construction. Yeah, we can fabricate and install custom gutters and install gutter covers. Absolutely. If you have buildings that require metal siding and flashing, we do that too. Decks? No, that's not in our wheelhouse. Concrete? No, that's beyond our scope. Fencing? No, we just stick with what we're good at. Sales department? No, we don't have one. But we do have an owner who provides all of our competitive, meticulous quotes. Yes, I'll have him call you right away.
Your name and number?
At Montana Roofing, we don't do everything, but what we do well. Visit MontanaRoofingServices.com.
Hi, I'm Charlene, owner of American Industrial Door, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
21 after 6, 770-5633, 770-KMED. Yesterday was the three-year anniversary of the suicide bombing of Abbey Gate at the, the Afghan airport, Hamid Karzai International Airport. That was during the withdrawal from Afghanistan. There were 13 U.S. service members killed in that blast, dozens more hurt, hundreds of civilians also hurt. And President Donald Trump yesterday visited Arlington National Cemetery, and he laid a wreath on the, at the cemetery on the anniversary of these 13 American service members having died during the withdrawal from Afghanistan. And by the way, Kamala Harris bragged about her role in the Afghanistan withdrawal earlier. Yeah, she did that. Now, of course, I don't know if she's saying much about it right now. I don't think she said much about it yesterday. And Kamala didn't say anything about it. Biden was at his beach house in Delaware, and Trump was over at Arlington Cemetery. So I guess we know the priorities there. I had mentioned to you on a personal note that this weekend I'm going to be heading over to Milan, Ohio, because it's my 45th high school reunion. And Sunday we're all getting together at the we have to go to the Milan Melon Festival first and have pierogies and cantaloupe ice cream, things like that. That's so much for any kind of dieting I'm hoping to do. Probably not going to happen while I'm at the Milan Melon Festival. But we're going to get together then and reminisce. It was a pretty small class, 150 or so. And 20 of us, 25 of us have already left, already shucked the mortal coil between then and now. But at my old high school, Edison High School, they have a new football field. They call it Freedom Field. And they ended up naming it in part after one of those 13 soldiers who ended up dying during the Afghanistan withdrawal, during the terror attack. Max Soviak as a graduate of Edison High School a few years ago. He was petty officer third class, and he ended up dying. And so they have named or nicknamed Freedom Field Max Soviak Field. Now, I haven't seen the field yet because the football field that we marched on years ago was it's long gone, I guess. They've replaced it with something which is much, much nicer, though. And last time I checked, about a year ago, they had raised somewhere between $600,000 and $1 million to do that. And so that was a big deal. That was a big deal in a little town of Milan, Ohio, about 2,300 people. Kind of a big gold hill is what Milan, Ohio is like, a little bit bigger. Kind of a Norman Rockwell kind of place. But I'm going to take a few pictures of that. I just want to see what kind of monuments they have to Max. And while I'm out there, I'll check that out. Now, I'll share some of that on Facebook. But I'm looking forward to seeing that. But boy, that just really was a sock to the gut for little community there in the Midwest. All right. Yesterday, well, I'll tell you, hot and heated with that wildfire hazard map meeting. Now, in Josephine County, they had 100 people or so show up. Richard Emmons in the Oregon Eagle, OregonEagle.com, has a great story. You can go to that and check it out, OregonEagle.com. He has a very comprehensive coverage. In fact, I think he's really the only one that's really done much comprehensive coverage of that. There were 100 people at the Ann Basker Auditorium because it was a Zoom meeting actually being held around the state. And the way Josephine County did it is that they had a meeting before in which they could talk about it with the commissioners, and then they put on the Zoom meeting, and people could watch the Zoom meeting while, you know, you were there at Ann Basker Auditorium. So it's almost, it does appear that nobody had anything good to say about the Senate Bill 762 deal. And Richard has some of the highlights here. I'll just touch on a couple of them. Baker County got the discussion started with a question about the appeals process. He said it was unfair to put the property owner under an appeals process for an anomaly in the fire map. A county commissioner from Wasco County later gave an example of a tax lot, which is 100% lake. It's lake. It's a lake. And it's rated moderate risk of wildfire. A Crook County commissioner spoke of adjoining properties with different hazards. Curry County Commissioner Jay Trost made a strong case to correct the map for Curry County residents. 90% of the properties are within 3 miles of the coast, and that the fire fuel reduction on state and federal lands would be a preventable measure to reduce the wildfire hazard. Jackson County Commissioner Dave Dotterer, boy, he just dove right into this one. Maps are fundamentally flawed. 10% of the tax lots not even counted. Wow. Bad information in means you're going to get bad information out. That's the quote from the story here. And he said, we don't know how many problems we have because the notification letters won't go out until after the comment period ends. The deeper you get into this, the worse it looks, really. Josephine County Commissioner Herman Bertschiger. We'll talk with him a little bit later. We always have our little Tuesday talk. He spoke for the board. He began by pointing out to the virtual attendees that we have 100 people in the auditorium who have submitted 50 questions for today's meeting. And despite the request to limit question to two or three, Bertschiger weighed in. How many years of experience fighting wildfires to the OSU employee? Zero. What computer program do you use to model the fires? The Large Fire Simulator Program. Herman also said the law added climate to causes of wildfire. He asked how the climate affected major fires, which happened 100 years ago. Yeah, we had much larger fires, 100 years ago, but, it's only climate that is affecting it right now. It's not, lack of harvest and the fact that the forests are growing. It's never that. It's climate change, right? So they just really grilled them. Let them have it. After the Zoom call ended, Josephine County Chair John West had a few questions for the local attendees. How much money was paid to OSU to create the map? Someone called out millions. Why this map? And West said it was about control. He's absolutely right. This is about depopulating, in my opinion, depopulating the West, the rural lands. They want everybody in that climate-friendly, equitable community? Well, that climate-friendly, equitable community does not mean you having 5 horse acres out in Josephine or Jackson County. Nope, they want you in the stacking pack. You going to let them? 29 minutes after 6, this is the Bill Myers Show, and you're on KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
Power outages are becoming more common. Patriot Electric can size you with the correct Generac generator backup system for when outages occur. Whether you need a powerful portable or a whole house system to power your house, barn, shop, and pump house, a flip of a switch will produce power when you need it the most to pump water and provide essentials like AC and refrigeration. Call Patriot Electric and get your own Generac generator, an investment you'll never regret. We are Generac sales, installation, and service professionals. Visit PatriotElectricOregon.com.
Summer's winding down, but the savings are heating up at Kelly's Automotive Service. We're saying goodbye to summer with a deal you can't miss. Get a full synthetic oil change up to 6 quarts, plus a free air filter, including installation up to $35, a digital vehicle inspection, and a Rain-X windshield treatment. That's a $250 value for just $99, most cars and light trucks. Get your car ready for the new season. Hurry in, the special is fully here for September. Kelly's Automotive Service, where we service your vehicle, but take care of you.
The Bill Myers Show is on News Talk 106.3 KMED.
We'll catch up on the rest of the news here in just a moment. Mark's here. Mark, you wanted to weigh in on that Hacienda project, the one that claimed that first you couldn't be a U.S. citizen and get the $25,000, $30,000 of home buying assistance. You had to be a non-citizen. Now they're backing away from that. What are you thinking?
Yeah, what I wanted to find out is this state program, or is it money from the Fed?
Oh, it's a state program. Yeah, this is an honest-to-goodness state program. Let me find it. Now, here we go. It passed in 2022, Senate Bill 1579. It created an economic equity investment program allocating $15 million to Business Oregon to distribute grants to organizations like the Hacienda that, according to the bill, provide culturally responsive services to support economic stability, self-sufficiency, wealth building, blah, 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 blah. Okay? So, yeah, it's state money.
Oh, good Lord. I can't believe it. Oregon's turned into California because I heard they're doing the same thing down there.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, though, they're claiming that, that's okay. No, citizens can actually apply for these grants, too. But the fact, though, that just look at the name, Hacienda, and the name Hacienda, this was a giveaway to the illegal alien community. And because they say that U.S. citizens can take part in this, but you have to qualify under economic equity risk factors. That's a quote there, which means that if you are a citizen, you probably have too many privilege points. See what I'm getting at here, Mark? Okay.
I just find it hard to understand. There's a lot of people in Oregon that don't even make $30,000 a year, you know, to even buy food and put their kids through school and stuff. We're just handing this stuff out.
Yeah. Well, if, you know, as long as you have single party rule of the state of Oregon, that's probably what you're going to be putting up with. Of course, I don't know. I'm going to have to take a look at who actually voted for Senate Bill 1579. It may not look as just cut and dried all Democrats because there could be people reaching across the aisle. I hope not, but I'll take a look.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good. I hope so, too.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Let me go to Bob. Hello, Bob. What's on your mind today about the paving downtown on Riverside?
Oh, good morning, Bill. Yeah, the metaphorical tentacles of Medford Main Street are finding their way on North Riverside with a big repaving project. I can't find a image or map or diagram of whether or not there will be bicycle lanes or whether they will be sharrows or whatnot. But one of my biggest pebbles in my tire tread is the fact that you've driven on Riverside. You know how overcrowded it is?
Yeah.
If you're in the left lane or the right lane, it's like steering a little dinghy in a gale trying to countersteer to keep from rolling into the curb.
Right.
And they did this on Main Street as well. And they just repaved over it, and they've done that so many times that the center of the crown of the road is well above the curb level, and it is a safety hazard. There have been accidents due to that, and I've asked them, are they going to knock that crown down and kind of flatten the road out a little bit? Because we're not going to have a glacial melt storm so bad that it requires that much of a gully.
Is the thought process that it's about draining away rain, stormwater? Is that what that's about?
Well, it doesn't need to be that severe because we have streets in Medford that are not that overcrowned, and they do not flood. They do not have standing water in heavy rains. So I think it's a matter of money. They don't want to grind it down because it costs more to level that road out. So therefore, they're just going to keep overloading it with asphalt. And I don't understand that.
Okay. That's a great pebble in your shoe along with the... Now, is this the part of Riverside that is the 20-mile-per-hour zone? Or is that different?
You know, I think part of it is... downtown, it is 20, definitely at Riverside and Main, and that's all scruffed up. And then it goes to, I think, 25 and then 30 north of Jackson Street. I don't know that they'll change the speed limit at all. And, you know, in talking about the history of Medford and all of that, you know, Riverside and Central used to be Highway 99. You know, it used to be part of the highway system, and the state has given up control of that and designation of that to the city within the city limits.
Well, they may have given up control or designation, but it still fulfills that road, or that role, rather. It is the backup for Interstate 5, should there be problems on I-5.
I agree.
And then to treat that with a 20-mile-per-hour speed zone? Really?
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
You know, they should take the secondary streets and make those slower, and if they want to do fun things with those, they could do fun things with those. Scott Henselman, he's a downtown real estate agent, actually spoke to city council and, you know, fell upon deaf, dead ears after the fact about making the bicycle lane, you know, on 8th Street or 6th Street rather than Main Street. And, you know, it was already baked in the cake a long time.
I think, you know, if there are some people who are really politically ambitious, let's say, unbaking the downtown transportation cake should be a really big part of some ambitious city council people. unbaking, unbaking the cake. All right. Appreciate the call there, Bob. 6:35 at KMED.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Deborah.
And this is our TimberTech story. We built the TimberTech deck. The deck floats into the landscape and looks like real wood. We did it all ourselves.
It was fun to just kind of figure it out. And we're still married.
Still married. TimberTech lets us enjoy a space and an experience that we couldn't ever enjoy before.
Feels like a new lease on our house. It's like a really special place in New York now.
The Hughes Lumber TimberTech sale starts this Friday, August 30th. Don't miss out.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time. Bill Meyer from KMED News. Here's what's going on. Heated criticism directed at Monday afternoon's meeting questioning Oregon State University and Oregon Department of Forestry concerning the draft wildfire hazard map program. More than 100 residents attended the Grants Pass meeting, while many county commissioners weighed in on the statewide Zoom meeting held in Salem. Oregon Eagle reports Jackson County Commissioner Dave Dodderer condemned the wildfire map, saying that they're fundamentally flawed, with 10% of the tax lots not being counted, saying it's bad information. Meanwhile, Joe County Commissioner Bearchigger asked about how the law added climate to causes of wildfires. He asked how climate affected major fires, which happened 100 years ago. Needless to say, condemning the MAP program. It's hoped by many attending that pressure will be brought to scrap the mapping program. Crews investigating a three-alarm structure fire that broke out at Roseburg Forest Products in Medford yesterday. Medford Fire checking out the venting system. Meanwhile, CAL FIRE announcing it's adding seven new C-130 air tankers into service. Air tankers previously a part of the U.S. Coast Guard fleet used for search, rescue, and cargo hauling. And the Oregon Employment Department has fixed a glitch in its new computer system that stopped the agency from paying jobless benefits to dozens of people who had previously been victims of identity theft. But the agency says more than 30 laid-off workers are still waiting for their money. Bill Meyer, KMED News.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason. Israel's military says it has rescued one of the scores of hostages abducted in the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel, which ignited the ongoing war in Gaza. Facebook chief Mark Zuckerberg now admitting it was wrong to kill the story about the Hunter Biden laptop. The special counsel in the dismissed Trump classified documents case is asking an appeals court to reinstate the case tossed out last month by a federal judge. A Texas federal judge has put a temporary hold on a Biden program that short-circuits the process for certain immigrant spouses to obtain U.S. citizenship. For a second night in a row, Russian drone and missile attacks have hit across Ukraine. At least five people were killed in this most recent barrage by the Russians. On Wall Street, the opening bell just sounding now, stocks starting off in the red. This is SRN News.
Here's the Rogue Gardener, fertilizing your mind.
Adding some fertilizer to stimulate growth can be okay. I don't even do it anymore with trees and shrubs, but I do it with short-term crops, vegetables, annuals. Every day that you lose with those plants without having growth-type fertilizers to help them get growing, not established, because I'm not worried about the plant establishing in the hole. I want it to grow.
Talk to Stan Saturdays 10 to noon, Sunday morning encore at 9. The Rogue Gardener on KMED, sponsored by Grange Co-op.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Got something on your mind? Give Bill a shout at 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
And what I have on my mind right now is Senator Ron Wyden. Yes, our senator, ostensibly from Oregon, maybe realistically from New York. I'm not exactly sure where he lives right now, but he's out there, styles himself as man of the people, looking out for the little guy. But apparently he wants clothes to be more expensive. Wow. Why would that be? We're on the talk with Brian Riley, who's the director of the Free Trade Initiative at the National Taxpayers Union, NTU. Brian, it's a pleasure having you on. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Brian, give me the story here about Senator Wyden. I guess he wants to, is he looking to protect American clothing manufacturers, or what's going on? What are you thinking here? Huh?
Well, for nearly 90 years, the U.S. has had something called a de minimis exemption for imported goods. And let me just explain what that is real quickly. when we impose a tariff on imports or a tax on imports, in other words, Congress, starting in the 1930s, exempted low-value imports from those tariffs. And the reason they did that is it cost more. If you're bringing in a 50-cent or a $1 good from another country, it costs more to run it through customs and to impose the tariff and to collect the revenue. We spend more money enforcing that than we do in the tariffs, the revenue that we get. So we get more cost than benefit. So we've had an exemption for those low-value goods for years, which has increased over time. Until 2015, the de minimis level was $200, and at that time, Congress increased the exemption to $800. So if you have clothing that comes in, say, at an average 15% tariff, if you, as a consumer, buy direct from the manufacturer and import something at less than $800, you don't have to pay the tariff.
Oh, okay. So you're buying your underwear online or something like that, direct from the manufacturer. You're buying jeans from Nautica or whatever it is, and I don't think they're made here. I don't believe they're made here. I think they're all made overseas in one factory or another. You're not paying tariff on those right now, right?
That's right. If you bring it in directly as a consumer or at any level, unless you're buying $900 jeans, but I don't know any. Maybe there's somebody out there who does that, but I don't know.
And maybe someone, ain't me. Okay, forget about that.
So we increased that exemption to $800, and in part because of that change, and in part because of new technologies and new abilities to deliver things and order something on the internet, boom, it's made for you, shipped out to you the same day or the very next day. That's something that's been exploding. And what several senators and congressmen, including Senator Wyden, have expressed concern about the growth in those imports and alleged that maybe people are smuggling things in and it's we're not catching it. And so what Senator Wyden has proposed is that we should really do away with that exemption for clothing and other products so that you would be subject to that tariff. And I think that at a time when if you look at polls and public opinion surveys, Americans' number one concern is the cost of living and inflation, I would hope we'd be looking at ways to bring down costs instead of adding to costs. And that's our concern with this proposal.
All right. So what will happen then if I get a pair of socks for a buck? I'm going to have to pay $1.14, according to Senator Wyden, if he gets his way. Is that what he's thinking?
Well, there'd actually be a little bit more than that, because that would be the tariff that you just mentioned. There also could be an import fee. It also could have to go through a customs broker, so that would add to the cost. Those costs are all going to go up as a result. But at a minimum, it would go up at that level that you just mentioned.
Oh, okay, okay. See, I thought that when you talked about import fees, that those were tariffs. So these are completely different charges that get put onto
you. Okay. It's both. I didn't explain that well. It's the import tax plus additional processing fees, plus the customs brokers to get stuff through. But the main effect would be the tariff. You're exactly right about that. And so you'd wind up paying more. And it's interesting because usually retailers have been really opposed to tariffs because it costs them a lot. They've got to pass the cost along to consumers. But in many cases, they're competing now with these direct-to-consumer sales. So if you're a big retailer, you import a bunch of, we'll just keep talking about socks, you import a bunch of socks, you pay the 14% tariff. But if somebody buys it directly, one of your customers can buy it directly, and they don't have to pay the tariff. So some retailers don't view that as fair. You know, in my view, the thing to do is, well, just bring down the tariffs on everything so that nobody has to pay them and we can all have more affordable clothing. But that's in this environment, cutting tariffs is a challenge to talk about here in D.C.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering how, you know, what that overall feel is, because there's a real populist bent to our politics right now. I know former President Trump is campaigning on actually imposing tariffs, and I think this has to do with trying to protect us from very low-priced foreign competition. Would that be a fair assessment? And to hear the Democrats talking about it, I guess they're all kind of worried about the same thing. Would that be fair? I'm not that I'm asking you to argue the opposite side of your argument, but I think that's what you're dealing with, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so the Harris campaign has criticized Trump's proposed new tariffs, but I think it's worth pointing out that the Biden administration has kept almost all of the tariffs that Trump had imposed in place, and even added some more tariffs. So it's not like there's been a lot of sunlight in terms of rolling back in any of the tariffs that have been imposed. The other thing that gets a lot of talk with respect to people who advocate tariffs is they want to restrict imports from China. However, they typically pivot from there to wanting to put tariffs on everybody else, which I don't see how that does any good in terms of helping our U.S.-China economic ties. I think we ought to be expanding trade with Canada and Mexico and our other allies around the world. A lot of people who talk about new tariffs because they say they're concerned about China, well, you suggest, well, let's roll back tariffs on other countries then, and you get not much of a positive response from them. I think a lot of them just want more tariffs, in part because of exactly what you said. They think we can bring back all the production to the United States.
Is there a case to be made, Brian, that more domestic production of clothing might be a thing? And I mean, I don't know. I it's hard to say. I don't know how you can bring. I don't know how. Wait. I'm sorry, I'm kind of stumbling on myself. American labor costs are just so high. I don't know how you really compete with some of these foreign places unless you threw tariffs on. But I don't know. You know, where are you going on this?
95% of economists, and I'm not pulling that number out of thin air, the American Economic Association survey of economists, 95% say tariffs cost more, create more costs than benefits, and that they're a bad idea. Now, I'm not saying we should just automatically believe what some expert says, but there's a reason for that. So we could bring that production back to the United States, and our dollar pair of socks might wind up costing $2 because it costs more to make here. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we would create a lot of jobs because they would all be produced in automated factories. It's not like going back to the 1930s where this is all produced around very labor intensive.
Yeah, the whole idea of bringing back the mill town over in the South so you could, you know, make clothes, that's probably not going to happen then, right?
Yeah, and I want to remind people that, as you may know, we manufacture a lot in the United States. Manufacturing is almost at an all-time high in terms of the dollar value of manufacturing output. We don't see it as much. You know, people will go buy a T-shirt that says made in Bangladesh, and they think, oh, we don't make anything in the United States anymore. But what we do, a lot of things we make are made with imported components. A lot of things we make are exported to other countries. So I think international trade is a real vital component of more economic growth. I think we ought to be trying to open more markets to U.S. exports instead of closing our own market, which has the opposite result. And there's definitely room for progress there, especially after the last 5 or 6 years.
Brian, is there a case to be made for heavy tariffs on the electric vehicles from China and various other places that are able to deliver a vehicle much, much more cheaply than the UAW can in Detroit?
Well, there can be, and I'm as big of a free trade advocate as I think you would find. But we do have rules in place that if foreign governments are subsidizing their production, that we view that as an unfair trade practice, and we can put tariffs on as a way to encourage countries to play by the same rules and not to subsidize their products. But speaking of subsidies, you know, the Biden administration has spent billions and billions of dollars in clean energy subsidies, including subsidies to electric vehicles. In many cases, that may contain parts and batteries that are made in China. So I think for a good starting point would be let's not subsidize that foreign production. And then if there is some, I don't want to say illegal, but some subsidization that violates trade rules, then we have laws on the books that we can use to put tariffs on and to evaluate those things. Right now, everybody's talking about, oh, we got to put tariffs on because we might import a bunch of goods from China, a bunch of EVs from China in the future. Well, we crossed that bridge when we come to it. Right now, it's not a huge issue. In terms of the assembled vehicles, in terms of the parts, it's certainly an issue. But if we try and say, look, we're going to build all the vehicles in the U.S., and we're going to build the batteries in the U.S., and we're going to mine the ore in the U.S., that creates a whole lot of issues that a lot of people don't really want to address. Not everybody wants a lithium battery factory in their backyard.
Nobody wants the lithium battery. Nobody wants the lithium battery warehouse in their neighborhood either. When it comes right down to it, right?
Well, they have a good fire station nearby, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you might need more fire stations than one. Gosh, those things light up like a candle, and then they burn for days. It's amazing what happens with those. What about you talked about subsidizing the industry? How does China subsidize their vehicle industry or their manufacturing? I mean, because China can't afford just to write hot checks to every industry to export into the United States, or can it somehow? Maybe I don't understand how this process works.
Now, that's a very insightful comment, and many people don't seem to understand. When I say many people, I'm talking about people making trade policy. They make it sound like China can afford to have what they call overcapacity and subsidize almost everything and send it out to the rest of the world. Well, China does not have unlimited resources to do that. So the short answer to your question is they can't. They can't subsidize everybody for the long term. Eventually, they run out of money. And if you look at communist governments around the world, they run out of money eventually, right, unless they have some external place to partner to subsidize them. I think what we want to do is not adopt some of the same kinds of policies that China has imposed. And by that, I mean the government picking winners and losers and saying we're going to target this industry for growth, because that's the American way is free markets, competition, and free trade in recent years has led to raising higher living standards in the United States. We've had more exports, more manufacturing growth. We have imported more manufactured goods from abroad. There's no doubt about that. But manufacturing has also gone up. And with respect to manufacturing jobs, which a lot of people are concerned about, the main issue, if you talk to any manufacturer, they're going to say our problem is I've got jobs that I can't fill because I don't have enough qualified workers. And so that's the real problem I think that we need to address.
You know, I might correct you gently on that one a little bit. Usually, a qualified worker means someone willing to work cheaper than the H-2B visa person coming in, you know, going for the high-tech world. How many times have we read the stories about American workers training their high-tech replacements? I don't know if I buy that there's a lack of American qualified Americans. Where might I be wrong there?
Well, so the manufacturing manufacturing managers, shop owners that I've talked to it's not been an immigration issue. It's been we just want workers who are educated and will show up on time and willing to do the work. And So I'm no immigration expert. That certainly plays into it. I don't disagree with you, but that's another reason I think trade is important. If we have if we want to deal with the threat of more immigration from Central America and elsewhere, we ought to encourage opportunities for people to produce goods there and have jobs there, so they don't have to say, well, there's nothing for us here. We got to pack up and trek 1,000 miles to the United States and try and find something there.
Yeah.
If we put a 60% tariff on everything from Central America, what do you think is going to happen to immigration?
They're going to come here. Yeah, they're going to come here. All right. What about where did we go wrong, though, over the last 30 years when it came to offshoring all of our almost, you know, the majority of a lot of our manufacturing, other than automobiles and some of the heavy industry and things like that? But where did we go wrong, and are we correcting course, or is it too late? Are we dealing with demographic shifts that make it impossible to really go back to any kind of something that would make the vice president candidate J.D. Vance happier about what's going on in some of these forgotten areas of the country, the Rust Belt?
Yeah, right. Well, exactly. And it's easy for politicians to blame trade for a variety of different concerns and issues. And politicians do it all the time and point the finger at other countries. But I think we got to look at our own policies, first of all. Do we have good tax policies that make it easy to start and grow a business? Do we have reasonable regulations that make it easy to start and grow a business and hire more people?
Hey, not anymore. Not these days we don't, as America.
Right, but if you're a politician, it's a lot easier to say, oh, it's China's fault or, oh, it's NAFTA's fault than to take a look in the mirror and say, hey, here's some things we can do here. Spending is out of control. The federal budget deficit is out of control. We're spending more and more just on interest payments on the debt. And if we could get a handle on those kinds of policies, I really think the concerns about outsourcing and manufacturing and everything else, I think those would work themselves out. I'm not too concerned about the idea of if somebody can make something more cheaply in another country and we can make something else more cheaply here and trade with them, I'm not too concerned about that. As long as we have an environment that lets people make things here, and it's getting harder and harder, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Brian Riley's the director of the Free Trade Initiative, and he has a new column in the American Institute of Economic Research's Daily Economy blog, that story. And you put that column up there. I'm going to link to that. Very interesting. So overall, though, taking it back to this tariff that Ron Wyden and other senators want to put on various clothing, is this going to get traction at this point, or are they getting a lot of incoming? Why don't you wrap a bow on this one, Brian?
Well, it's getting a lot of traction, and the economic study, two economists from UCLA that we cited in that report that you mentioned linking to, showed it would cost up to $14 billion a year, and it's a tax that would primarily hit low-income households. The economists looked at who actually is importing these low-value goods, and they found that low-income Americans would pay the most if the taxes went into effect. And it's certainly something that's on the agenda. Senator Wyden is very well-positioned as chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. And in the House, there are a lot of Republicans who view this as a way to stick it to China. So something along these lines is likely to be talked about. And my concern is that again, politicians say they're aiming at China, but they're going to wind up hitting Americans instead in a way that hurts us as consumers. And also hurts us as exporters, because when we put tariffs on goods, other countries respond by putting tariffs on our exports.
There's always a retaliation, isn't there? Every time. Yeah. Every time. You can just about guarantee it, all right? Brian, I appreciate you explaining your take on this, all right? Brian Riley, director of the Free Trade Initiative of the National Taxpayers Union, NTU. We'll have you back. Thank you again. Be well. Take care.
Thank you.
It is 6:58. You're on KMED 99.3 KBXG.
Hi, this is Dwayne Barkley, owner at American Rentier Garage, a full-service auto repair shop. We get numerous questions that begin with, hey, do you work on? So to put it simply, if it's between your license plates, we probably work on that. Call, stop by, or text us through our website at AmericanRentier.com. Stop by Biddle Road, right across the street from Elmer's, or call us at 541-499-6673. American Rentier Garage, we are united through service.
Stay updated on recreational opportunities all over our region with the Outdoor Report every Friday morning just past 7 a.m. on the Bill Meyer Show. The Outdoor Report on KMED and KCMD is powered by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your department of adventure off Vilas Road on Airway Drive. Did you know that with Good Guys Guns Background Concierge Service, customers get approved the same day? And for under 21-year-old customers, Good Guys Guns at 4934 Crater Lake Avenue gets you approved in half the time of the big box stores. That's right. Good Guys Background Concierge Service gets you your firearm faster than the other guys. And this service is free with every firearm purchase. Good Guys Guns, the Valley's firearm leader. 4934 Crater Lake Avenue. Good Guys Guns.
Good Guys Guns.
It's the Bill Meyer Show on KMED, Southern Oregon's place to talk.
7 o'clock at KMED. KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass. Big talk with Jason Shepherd, Wimkin Social Media. We want to talk about the guy who runs Telegram, the Telegram app, who has been arrested in France. And my suspicion is that he wouldn't agree to spy for the European Union enough. He just wouldn't do it. That's my suspicion. But Jason, of course, will tell me more about this. And I think this is really interesting, especially coming on the heels of Zuckerberg talking about, yeah, we're sorry. We're really, really sorry. Yeah, we spied on you. And yeah, we surveilled you. And yes, we repressed you. And yes, we censored you. But we're really, really sorry. Please open up an Instagram account, I guess. Where do we go on that? Something that might be worth talking about at some point, though. I'm going back on that conversation I had with Brian Riley on the Free Trade Initiative, and he was going after Senator Wyden wanting to make clothing cost more. Okay, and I appreciate that. I just wish we could make clothing great again, because I don't know what it is, but everything that seems to be available, for the most part, for the typical American, some of the crappiest quality in clothes that I've ever seen in my entire life seems to be coming out of the systems these days. And I know it's just my experience, but I'm just astounded at the poor sewing, poor quality clothing. I'll just give you one example just in my personal experience. I've been buying Nautica jeans online for probably 10, 15 years. And I just consider them kind of, you know, I'd wear them for 2-3 years and then they'd start getting a little thin and a little worn, and then I'd replace them. And then I replace them every another 2-3 years. So they changed the formula over the last year. Now, maybe this is really more about shrinkflation rather than the, you know, tariffs and all the other trade things that Brian Riley was talking about with me. But I'd order the same jeans every time. And jeans would last me 2-3 years, and I would get 2-3 pair, and I'd, you know, wear them a lot for work and various other things, because I do a lot of technical work and I'm out there. And they would last 2-3 years, and then usually the belt loops would start popping off and things like that. Well, now, with the new formula Nauticas, you buy them, $23, $25, whatever the case might be, and I bought 3 pair earlier this year. Two of the three have had the crotch rip out. same jeans, same kind of use, everything else. And then I came home the other day, and Linda said, "Bill, what happened to your pants?" And I didn't even notice, right? You know, well, it's a good thing you weren't going inside any stores or something. Like, boom, had just ripped out. And yeah, I'd like to see some someday about making clothing great again in America. Maybe that's what it would take. I don't know. But a big difference between the quality of what we Americans are buying in our stores as to what you'll see over in the European Union. Like, I remember when I was in Paris. Now, I know that's going back 16, 17 years now. Clothing much more expensive, but it's not disposable. You buy something and you're going to be able to use that for a number of years. You're going to pay more. I don't even think we really have much of an option in the United States, do you? I don't recall much of that. Maybe we talk about that a little bit later on. So kind of a pebble, boulder in my shoe, and a hole in my crotch as far as the Nautica jeans. It's